Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. My name is. Oh, that is just not going to work at all. Oh, never accept a dare from Mark Walsh. Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. My name is Leslie Kaminoff, and you may know me as the co-author of the international bestseller, Yoga Anatomy. But I'm also the co-founder of yogaanatomy.net. Now, that's a platform we built 11 years ago where we offer online courses and in-depth anatomy modules that support teachers, teacher trainings, and students all over the world. So that's why we are thrilled to be sponsoring all the incredible sessions here on the Yoga Channel, including my own. And if you feel a connection with the way I teach, I have some great news for you. We are extending scholarships to all members of the Embodiment Conference. And you can find that scholarship info and links to yogaanatomy.net in the description for this presentation and in the show notes. In the meantime, enjoy your body, enjoy your breath, and enjoy your conference. And I'll see you online.
And now it is my distinct pleasure to introduce you to Matthew Sanford. He's an internationally recognized yoga teacher for people of all abilities, a sought-after public speaker, founder of the nonprofit Mind Body Solutions, and author of the critically acclaimed Waking, a memoir of trauma and transcendence. His knowledge of the transformational power of yoga comes from his own lived experience. Matthew was paralyzed from the chest down at age 13 and began his journey of healing through yoga at age 25. He has emerged as a leading voice in the integrated health movement. In 2010, he won the Pioneer of Integrative Medicine Award from the California Pacific Medical Center's Institute of Health and Healing. Matthew offers an amazing adaptive yoga teacher training called Opening Yoga. And it is a pleasure to hand it over to you, Matthew. I'm so excited for your session.
It's an honor to teach with you guys. So it's fun to see people from all over the place. I like that a lot. So I'm gonna get so I can see more of you that are tuning in. All right, so if you don't know, as she said, like I was injured when I was 13, so I'm getting around in a wheelchair, right? So I've been practicing yoga since I was 25 and I'm 54. So that means 29 years. Right. And one of the things that people imagine about me, or they think when they think about disability, they think, oh, that's really cool. He overcame his disability and became a yoga teacher. And I want to switch that over on its head. Right. I want you to know that I'm a yoga teacher exactly because I live an altered mind-body relationship. Right. So it's not like I've figured out how to do poses despite my body. I've been on an exploration of sensation within the body and the potential of the human nervous system to have awareness and subtle awareness that can occur despite a severed spinal cord, right? So think about me about, I'm gonna show you some things and tell you some things about how you might be able to teach everyone, but to fundamentally recognize in when you're teaching people of all abilities, if you're a yoga teacher, this is your opportunity to explore at a deeper level than you could with your other students, how prana manifests through human consciousness. So I'm coming out of the gate kind of hot to let you think about, wow, you know, like this is how, so if you think about the way that awareness travels through the body, basically look how we literally manifest. It comes from the center core outward. Even our anatomy does this, right? You got a spinal cord, and you've got your nervous system and the electrical impulse carriers coming out from the core center. You've got the way your breath moves. You've got your vascular system. You've got your organs. It comes from the core to the outer edges, right? And this is true regardless if you do any kind of other yoga or anything. And so I've been exploring how do you integrate what you can feel and control with what you can't feel and can't control? Because if I were to, that's how I think what's happening in a yoga pose is that you're learning to integrate. Okay, let me say that again. What you can feel and control, i.e. muscular actions, ligaments, tendons, right? Your breath to some extent, what you can feel and control with what you can't feel and can't control. And when those two energies or the whole range of energies come together, I think you have yogic realization through asana, right? So if you think about yoga that way, my disability, what I found after practicing for a long time is that in fact, my most profound teacher is my paralyzed body, because it's confronting me. Think about it from the chest down. So I'm paralyzed from the chest down. It's by nonprofit mindbodysolutions.org, right? From the chest down, like I have a body that no matter what I do, 2/3 of my body will resist my will. I don't get to succeed in any yoga pose by trying harder. I've had to explore how my nervous system, how human manifestation can travel transcendently beyond the central nervous system, right? And so more what you're gonna hear today is, I'm gonna teach you, show you some things maybe about adapting yoga, but more I want you to think about what you already know in your own yoga practice from a slightly different perspective so you can share it with everybody. Because here's one of those lines that doesn't always make sense to people when they're in my training. It's that your greatest commonality between you and anybody that you're teaching, especially people who are living with all different types of mind-body relationships and levels of ability than yours, your greatest commonality is still your yoga practice. You need to know your own poses. It's not just about bringing different adaptations to me, or at least how I teach, teaching everybody. And it comes out of something very personal, is that I want, as a student coming to you, and this is really important for me, and why what I do, it's not yoga therapy at all, is that I just wanted to be a yoga student. I had been through the accident that killed my father and sister. It was a big car accident. And I came to yoga because I missed my body, not because I wanted anything fixed. I'd already been through a whole bunch of rehab. I'd already been a whole bunch of stuff. I didn't want any more of that. I just wanted to live in the only body I'm ever going to have. And I wanted to live in it as deeply and profoundly as I could, right? And so that's been the launching point. So I want, and what the way that I wanted to give you some hints about today, because this is a big subject, is how do you teach someone to do yoga poses? I'm going to focus more on asana. Do yoga poses from inside to out, right? If you think about if you have a more traditional body, your learning process, and if you're an asana teacher, right, your learning process has been the repetitive performance of poses over time, leading to your realization of yoga. So you have access to a whole range of poses, right? And you can do them over and over again. Most of your students that live with disabilities and difficult mind-body relationships don't have that luxury. They're not gonna be able on their own or without some help to be able to feel the poses repetitively, right? Over time. So your yoga practice has been most likely from the outside, from the gross body to more inward realization. I want you to learn how to teach backwards from that. I want you over time to learn how to teach from the inside of poses to the outside, because I'm not going to be able to, in Dandasana or staff of light pose, stretch, hit down through my inner thighs and stretch out through my inner heels. That's not going to be possible for me physically. But does that mean I don't get access to staff pose? What's going to be my access to standing poses if I can't stand? So if you're a teacher that thinks that standing poses depend on standing up or in a sitting down position, mimicking standing up in the shape of standing up, you're not going to be able to teach me yoga. You're going to keep forcing my body into your world, right? And imposing certain structure and poses and shapes of poses onto my body. And then you try to tell me that that's what yoga is, right? So, but again, my path, I'm going to have to learn more from less. I'm not going to get as wide range of poses as you. And nor should that be your goal with me, right? Your goal shouldn't be to teach me all these different poses, because if you keep, or ones that like, that's the maybe what kept you going in your yoga practice. Because if I keep thinking that belonging to yoga requires certain asanas that my body can't do all the way, you're ramming my head right into my disability, right? Over and over again, and expecting me to keep going. Now think back to your own practice. Remember, your greatest commonality is between you and me and our practices is your yoga practice. Like, what is it that really kept you going in yoga, right? Like, maybe you're the one that wanted to achieve more and more poses, but eventually there are going to be poses you can't do. And eventually you're going to run into limits, especially as you start aging, right? What really is important, in my opinion, is, and what keeps me coming to yoga for 29 years, I remember my yoga teacher, the first time I ever met her, Joe Zukovich in San Diego, California. By the way, I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota in the United States. It's early here, right? It's not my favorite time on a Saturday morning. Was it she made me a partner in the yoga, in the exploration? Because she didn't know, this is back in 1991. It's before yoga was like popular at all. Or just beginning to become, she had no idea how yoga manifested through a paralyzed body, right? We had to figure it out together. We had to like explore and think. And the fact is that, and she's still a really good friend of mine now, it's like, it changed us both. So I want you to realize that your exploration, it's not like, oh, I learned so much from my students and you say that in words. I'm telling you, you're not gonna believe what you're gonna learn if you work with people with disability. You're not going to believe the insights that you get, and you get like literal proof of how the flow of prana like happens in a body and can happen through a twisted limb and how sensation can travel through a limb that isn't there. I mean, I'm telling you, it's like, have you ever seen The Matrix, the movie, right? I'm a big Matrix fan. When the Oracle says to Neo, what's really going to bake your noodle is, remember that line in that movie? Honestly, teaching adaptive yoga to everyone is going to bake your noodle. You're not going to believe the things that you see and you feel. And it's going to inform you as a yoga practitioner. It's going to inform your teaching of people with all abilities, but it's going to really change you as a teacher for your traditional students too. It's going to make you see all those things you weren't quite sure about. You hear all this philosophy stuff. You're going to see happen through the human system. The fact, like, for example, alignment is an effortless form of mind-body integration. This is one of the, I'm an Iyengar teacher, right? So it's one of the great, it's one of the revolutions, I think, of Iyengar yoga, is by paying attention so much to alignment, the distribution of prana gets smoother and comes through the system more fluidly. As long as you don't get too attached to making the pose perfect. A little bit of alignment transforms sensation in a yoga pose. Do you remember, like, what really sticks you to yoga is that feeling like when all of a sudden you're doing a pose, maybe you get an adjustment from a teacher, or maybe all of a sudden you understand an instruction better and the whole pose seems to open up and flow differently. And you're like, oh my God, and all of a sudden it gets easier even though the pose is being really hard. Right? All of a sudden you're like, oh my goodness, there it is. That must be what the pose is supposed to approximate. That sensation is what I want you to be able to pass on to any mind-body relationship. I want you to start studying the difference between, let's get back to what my yoga teacher said to me first day. There's bad stretching mat, there's good stretching mat, and then there's yoga. Don't confuse yoga with good stretching. That line, I've been thinking about that line since I started 29 years ago, coming up on 30 now. And it's like, wait, so yoga is this happening that occurs when things are done in a certain way, and poses, and this is what I think is really valuable about my perspective for you with yoga, is that poses are more received than you think. They're received more than they're asserted. But the control of our bodies makes us think that we're asserting poses. No, the instructions, I think, the yogis, the lineages, whatever kind of yoga you do, I love that, the fact that no matter where I go in a yoga pose, someone's been there before me. I love that. You're in company. There is company. You're not alone. Somebody's been there and they've tried to communicate to you how it happens, right? Is that the poses, the instructions, when you start really, really thinking about them and realizing what they are, they're actually just following the prana manifestation, right? And some of you are probably trained more to have a breath approach. There's nothing wrong with that. But there are many roads. Have you thought about the idea, and this is really important for someone with a disability, have you thought about the idea that prana does not care if you're breathing? Prana also travels through empty space. It doesn't just travel through physical structure. So what does that mean for your poses? What if the subtle body, which I'm about to start talking about, what if the subtle body is the conduit, or empty space is the conduit of the subtle body? Not your ability to flex and strain. In fact, in order for your structure, your physical structure, to have prana flow through it, you've got to learn how to do it with precision. Repetition again. You have to learn how things like, how do you maximize your base? How do you stay in a set in balance? How do you learn to bring the muscle into the bone gently, right? Things like that are happening in poses that you may not have to have had to think about the way that I've had to think about, because I've had to sit there and try to figure out how yoga moves through the human system. Again, going back to how I started, it's like, how do poses happen? What do they feel like? So one of the things I like to say is that the principles of yoga don't discriminate. Yoga poses do, right? Headstand's going to be really hard for me to do, right? So, and if you spend all your time, I'm using headstand as an obvious extreme, if you spend all your time trying to get my body into headstand, you leave me behind as a practitioner. I don't get to be there. That's about you. I can't tell you how many, when I would teach at yoga journal conferences, all these teachers are kind of fascinated by my, how am I doing yoga? How do I do this? And they'd look at me and go, I'd love to get you in my yoga chair. I want to get you upside down and get you to feel inversions. And it's like, I know at that moment, they could never be my teacher. There's no way I'm just going to submit to the shape of a pose, right? How do, like in our trainings, I can teach you how to do inversions without going upside down. I can do a whole bunch of things because you can start to realize what's happening in an inversion. I'm picking an extreme category of poses, but what's happening in an inversion? And I want you to think more about what are the sensations in poses? What are the things you really like about headstand? What are the things you really like about Trikonasana? What are the things that you feel? Help me feel sensations from inside to out, right? As opposed to trying to make my body into a shape to teach me the sensations. right? So again, this idea of doing yoga backwards, a little bit differently than you might have otherwise. So what do I mean? Well, let's just try a couple of things. So this idea of a subtle body. So let you know what this is already. And I don't mean like chakras, which is all great stuff. I'm just trying to talk. Remember, I'm really practical on one level, even though I'm a philosopher. And I want you to think about the subtle body as a level of experience that is more subtle than what you can control, right? Like, for example, there's a great line from BKS Iyengar, which I read in the first year I started practicing yoga in Tree of Yoga, was that you only need two things for a yoga pose. This coming from arguably the greatest asana practitioner that ever was on the planet, right? Because like that was the strength of Iyengar and part of the weakness, I think, is that he went to physical asana to try to reveal a whole bunch of stuff, right? He said, you only need two things for a yoga pose, a center of gravity and a sense of direction. He didn't say muscular action. That baked my noodle. I was like, this is gonna be so cool. The guy that's gonna give more physical instructions that I can never do actually said, you only need those two things. Except what those two things mean is not nearly as simple as you think. All right, so just sit in simple cross legs for a second. If you're out in a chair, you can just sit center. But if you think about just for a second, here's an example, a very subtle example of the subtle body, right? So if you're sitting in simple cross legs, I want you to ground. And have you ever noticed that when you become subtly aware of your base, you feel a slight rise and up? You ever notice that the more you ground, like if you're standing in Tadasana and you put a sandbag on your feet, if you get a sensation of down, there's a sensation of rise? That should bake your noodle. Remember, I'm gonna try to make you think about the poses differently. That wonderful feeling of when you finally sit down when you're exhausted and the chair holds you up, and then you feel a lighter feeling coming into your body of ease. What if the subtle body disguises itself as the sensation of relief? What if poses get more fluid and refined and, quote, easier through the sensation of ease, right? But I don't mean ease that's created by doing less. I mean ease that's realized as a sense of direction in poses. Right, so hopefully already you're beginning to go, what's he talking about? That makes sense. Maybe it's right on the edge. It's like, good. I want you to explore, right? I want you to keep exploring. So here's an example of the subtle body. So feel the down, feel the rise, right? Remember, I think when you're centering, you're actually, you're opening the door to a different level of sensation. That the sensation that comes to your body when you allow needs to combine with the sensation of exertion, right? So you get access to more of the universe when you're not trying so damn hard, right? And you have to combine that energy with the energy of exertion. And if you don't, your poses will always have a level of violence in them, right? That the integration of those two, right? All right, so sit and you feel your base outside of your feet and your sitting bones. Differentiate between your sitting bones and your very low abdomen. Hit down with your sitting bones and take your very low abdomen up the front of your chest. So notice when you make a distinction like that in your base, this is a really important distinction in Tadasana, right? You go down, you rise up, right? So now on this next few inhalations, think of your spine as your ribs, as the fingers of your spine trying to caress your breath. Don't think of them just as structure. They're direct manifestations out of your spine and they're surrounding your breath, right? So I want you to feel the inhalation, the expansion of your rib cage. And then you exhale, there's a little bit of drop because volume is changing, right? But on this next couple of breaths, I want you to take the inhalation, feel the expansion, keep the expansion even as you exhale. So a breath or two like that, where you keep, you don't drop on the exhalation, you actually extend on the exhalation. To help you extend on the exhalation, after this next inhalation you take, feel as if you're someone's pushing you on the inner edge of your shoulder blades, forward on the inner edge of your shoulder blades. So you're exhaling, leading from your back ribs, the bottom inner edge of your shoulders. You take an expansion up, you exhale, pushing forward from that. From the inside edge of your shoulder blade. And notice when you do that, maybe you feel a little bit more down through your sitting bones and an elongation out the top of your head because your abdomen's coming back and your back ribs are coming forward because you're exhaling from your back ribs. Can you exhale from the back ribs, your abdomen slightly hits back. So there's an opportunity for you to realize that even on a breath, the inhalation breaths up, the exhalation goes underneath from the bottom edge of the shoulder blades. There's a down energy, there's an up energy as your chest is being lifted by your breath. And you can almost feel an extension beyond your sitting bones go down on the exhalation, but as you elongate through your spine, there's a lengthening and a sense of lengthening out through the top of your head. So if some of you aren't feeling what I'm talking about, that's okay. Know that there's more happening in your poses than you know. Don't ever forget that a pose is infinite, right? And there's opportunity. This isn't the only way to see these poses. This idea that there's an expansion on an exhalation, on an inhalation, and an extension on an exhalation, is true in virtually every single pose from a pranic level, right? So I'm looking at asana, trying to figure out what are the universal principles that make asana possible. And I try to teach my students those. So yogic insights, mind-body insights that don't depend on me being able to do the whole pose. I'm going to try to learn yoga and realize yoga near the hub of the wheel, right? Near the hub of the wheel rather than on the outer edge, right? I'm going to try to simplify poses. Someone just asked me to slow down. I probably can't, right? You just have to like watch it again, okay? Because we don't have that much time. Watch it. You have access for 48 hours. I can slow down a little bit. I'm trying to right now, but there's a lot to try to get across to you. All right. There's a lot. All right. So I want you to stand up and stand up if you can. If you're in a wheelchair, so just sit up and do your Tadasana in a chair, or if you're in a chair, but stand up. Again, now I'm just trying to get you to this insight of that there's a sense of direction in every pose and a feeling of unity in every pose if you're doing it well. So stand with your feet together. So I think one of the things when I talk about the subtle body or subtler awareness in poses is that I encounter by, I've been teaching adaptive all levels of ability for 23 years, coming up on 24 years. The outer body is different. It varies a lot in human beings. But everyone has a subtle body. The subtle body is what's universal. Okay, so stand in Tadasana, feet together, or rather be in the, with your feet together. And think about the instruction. And you know that Tadasana is in every pose, right? So if you haven't thought about that, Tadasana is in every pose. And so this would be a good pose to teach people so they can feel into other poses. So I want you to get used to thinking about bridge poses, poses that bridge into other poses, right? So you're staying in Tadasana. So now balance on the four corners of your feet. So look at what that instruction does. The sensation of balance makes you go inward. It teaches pratyahara, which means you're going to want to teach balance to everybody, you know, regardless if they can physically balance, right? So balance on the four corners of your feet. So your mind has to go down to the four corners of your feet, right? And so that's the beginning. So now here's another universal principle in yoga poses. Poses are always traveling in more than one direction, right? Big principle. You can teach that to anybody, right? How to move in multiple directions at once. So even here in Tadasana, hit down through your heels and rise up through the core, right? Spread your feet and lift out of your ankles. Does anyone right away feel a lift up through the chest when you actually spread your feet and lift out of your ankles and hit down through your heels? Yep, that'd be the subtle body. The subtle body is what receives more than what acts, right? So now, not only do I want you to balance in your Tadasana, in your body, trying to get so the tailbone comes forward, top of the thighs hit back, all those things you've already know, right? But now I want you to balance in your body and hit down and rise up. But now I want you to balance with the whole room. So stand there and practice both interoception and proprioception. Both parts of your nervous system. So the balance with the whole room is what's often lost if you fall too in love with what you're doing in yoga poses. And balancing with the whole room is a sensation. And your nervous system is wired for it. So now, as you're being sturdy in your own body, you're also going to find that expansion requires boundary. But that's for another week or another time we're together, right? Hold on, my son just came home from college. Hold on one second. I'll be right back. Just had to tell him I was teaching. He didn't know. Came home from college just now. He didn't know I was teaching. Sorry about that. So you're back to balancing with the whole room, right? And being in the whole room, right? And now I want you to do something funny. Keep your heels down, but come forward onto the balls of your feet without falling over. And ask yourself, are you more or less connected to the whole room? You may feel more because your muscles are firing, but your ability to be connected to the whole room has changed. Now go behind the balance point, right? Go back on your heels more. Don't fall over. Notice how your neck has to strain and you have to do some things, and it's harder for your consciousness to be connected to the room, right? So now come onto the four corners of your feet. And now rebalance with the whole room. The sensation of balance is the doorway to the sensation of connection. Conditions of safety must be met in order for you to unify. Big truth in every yoga pose, right? And then release. So for those of you that can, I'd like you to do downward facing dog, right? So go on your hands and knees, hips in front of your knees, hands slightly in front of your shoulders. Remember, I'm trying to give you examples of a sense of direction, right? Which I think is a principle in any yogic realization, right? All right, so come on up into dog pose. Keep your feet hopefully hip width apart. I know the ones where your feet are narrower, but don't. That'll make it more physical in your shoulders. So if your feet are at least hip width apart, it won't be as heavy in your shoulders. So now, as you're in your dog pose, I want you to do something wrong that's going to make it really hard. Not really hard. I want you to keep your hands in the same place, but bring your fingers together, right? So do dog pose like with your hands like this. And notice how much heavier your pose just got, right? Ever. I mean, your pose is just... Now open your fingers and open your palms and realize how much lighter the energy gets to go up through your hips. Right? So that's what I mean by a sense of direction. Now show it to yourself again. Put your fingers together. Watch how much heavier the pose gets. Your relationship to gravity has changed. There's more physical strain and you're less connected to the space around you. Now open your palms, open your fingers, and follow the direction up into the pose. Good, and then come on down into child's pose. And then come on up, have a seat up. So that's me trying to give you like evidence of the fact that there's a sense of direction in every pose. And it didn't depend on everything. I'll never forget the first time I read that, I read that Bika Singer had said in a class, dog pose is entirely mirrored in your hands. It's reflected in your hands. Okay, great line for a paraplegic to read, right? Really good line. Because it made me know, oh my God, it's not about being exactly in the shape. I can actually explore. So as a yoga teacher with people with abilities, I want you to open doors for me, right? Open my curiosity, help me explore my body. In other words, I want you to do what you do for every other student, everyone you have. But I want you to do it knowing that you don't get to do it the same way. You've got to make me feel that I belong, that yoga happens from inside to out. You're going to have to explore your own yoga practice differently. And I promise you, it's going to be incredibly rewarding. Incredibly rewarding. Okay, now, because things are already going, the reason why I was going fast is because like I've just started and I have to end relatively soon for questions and stuff. So everyone sit in Dandasana, staff pose. So there are a couple different principles that I think are universal that we teach and try to help people understand, teachers that come to get them more deeply. One is, I've already said one. One is in every pose, you're going down to go up. Every single pose. That's never not happening. Gravity makes sure it's true, right? And if you can integrate the downward energy with the upward energy, you've got yoga, right? And not only see that, I think we're rising and falling in every single day of our lives, that this is an existential truth. I think it's an existential truth that's reflected in every yoga pose. So you're actually getting more congruent with your existence when you start to realize the perpetual down and up, and they're an integrated sensation. Yoga poses make them look like they're separate. So when you push down through your heels in Tadasana, I told you to rise up through the core. As soon as you push down through your heels, something rises, right? Now, if you had a block, I'd show you this again. If people have a block, right? I'll show that in a second. So in Dandasana, here's another principle. In almost every single yoga pose, and I would say everyone, but I hate to sound like I'm talking hyperbole, right? You lift your chest in almost every single pose. Even like arm balances, when it drops, the inner sternum is still lifting, okay? So there is not a pose. Even when you come down in a forward bend, right? The inner sternum is still elongating, right? Otherwise you lose sensation in your legs. Right? So this is in every pose. Why? Because it distributes awareness from your center core out through your limbs. Okay, so I'm going to try to show it to you. Remember, I'm trying to get you to feel poses you've already done a whole bunch of times, but have you start to feel them differently. So arms at your Dandasana, arms at your sides, so legs sort of in front of you. If you're on the floor, roll the inner upper, lift the chest. Inner upper thighs hit down, stretch out through the inner heel, right? So notice when you're doing that, there's more of a crispness on your sitting bones. Now let your sitting bones, instead of being sharp, let them be like butter. Let them just go, feel your chest drop, right? Okay, so now notice when you start to lift your chest, notice that lifting the chest spreads awareness out through your legs. Feel the integrated sensation. that as soon as you lift your chest, awareness goes through the limbs. This is going to be repeated in every pose. If I've got my arms wide and I drop my sternum, my arms are going to get heavier, right? In a standing pose. This little action is perhaps the most important action in asana besides grounding, is learning to lift your chest. And so, unfortunately, the mind learns better when the mind's the last to the party, right? You haven't figured out that in asana, your body's teaching your mind, right? And your brain's the last to the party. Your mind, unfortunately, learns better from loss than it does from gain, right? Because we're evolved to perceive threat, not to perceive relief, right? Our brains are wired for threat. They're not wired for relief. Okay, so sit in Dandasana. Remember, so one of the ways to start to show the effect of just the principle of lifting your chest, right, is lift your chest. Try not to do it just from your low back. Feel it like move you into a more whole position. If you can't feel it, now just drop your sternum and notice the difference in your pose. Drop it down. Let your sitting bones be like butter. It doesn't have to be so much, Marielle. It can be a little one. It can be a little drop, just a drop of a little bit, right? Right, and then lift your chest again and feel the whole pose as it becoming. As soon as you lift your chest, it's like a sunrise, right? And then follow it out through your legs. And then just a little bit, drop your sternum just a little bit. And notice how the gravity gets heavier. Lift your chest, hit the inner upper thigh in and down, extend out through your heels. Now I just think poses, the yogis just got bored so they developed asana. So now you're sitting in Dandasana. You want to make it harder? Take your arms straight up over your head. Inhale. Take them up. Oh my God, it's way harder. Don't interlock your fingers. That's a little bit cheating, Lely. Like, yank straight up, right? Try. Why would you roll your tricep towards the ear, right? To find your sitting bones. This action is to show you your base. Everyone bend your arms a little bit, right? Feel how much heavier your pose just got? Straighten them out. Roll that in, hit down through your sitting bones. Lift up beyond your fingertips, down through your sitting bones, reach beyond your fingertips, breathe. This is harder. Try to lift your sternum here, right? Some of you just like, I said, Lely, you just did it on inhalation. I just saw you do it on inhalation, right? And then take your arms down. How do you follow and make the pose be less physical and more received, even when you're working hard? That's asana. Show me how to do it. Show me how to do that, how to all of a sudden make something more yogic rather than less. Pass on to me the sensation of yoga. When something goes from stretching and exertion to yogic, which you know from your own practice, figure out how to communicate that to me. Sometimes it's going to be instructions. Sometimes it's going to be all different things, right? So here's another. So I said, in to go out, or I mean down to go up, a lifted chest in every pose. Here's another fundamental principle of poses. You have to go in to go out, right? In order to actually, so simple thing. So take your arms wide. Mm-hmm. Now, if I want you to stretch beyond your fingertips, you could reach to try to do that, but wouldn't it be more effective to bring your shoulder blades together and down to reach beyond your fingertips? That in fact, you have to move towards the midline in order to extend into the space around you. Good, and then release. If those of you that have a block, or a book nearby, everyone stand up in Tadasana again. Put the block between your ankles. So on the thin side, the long way, you know, so it's on the thinner side, on the long thin side is down. Put that between your ankles. Okay, here's another thing I want you to teach me if I'm your student, right? All right, so notice you have the block there. hopefully you don't have your socks on, but you know, so take off your socks if it's easy, right? So now I want you to stand there, and now I want you to squeeze the block. And notice as soon as you squeeze the block, you feel a lift up through your chest, right? So you've been, by having the block there and the reference of the block, you've increased your awareness of your base. But when you squeeze the block, the muscles come to the bone in the thighs and you receive an upward lift. Okay. Again, I'm really interested in what's received in poses, not just what's exerted in poses. Right. So now, and then don't squeeze the block anymore and feel the drop and the increase of the sensation of heaviness and gravity. Okay. So now squeeze the block again. Feel the upward rise. Now I want you to keep squeezing. Squeeze it too hard. And then I want you to ask yourself, are you more or less connected to the whole room when you squeeze too hard? The answer is less. So in every single pose, you need to find the sweet spot of action. So now go back, don't squeeze the block again. And now this time balance how hard you need to squeeze the block in order to feel the rise and the sense of direction, but don't and squeeze hard enough that you make the pose have some boundary at the midline, right? We're squeezing at the midline. Everything goes from the midline out, but don't squeeze so hard that you lose connection to the whole room. Any kind of effort that travels in a single direction is going to lead to violence. Right? And now here's the kicker. Here's a line from Bikes Sangar, and then release for a second, that is actually what yoga poses are doing over and over again. And he says, when my body is one, when it's like a lump of clay, when my body's one, my mind breaks into pieces. So when my body's not differentiated, I'm not able to make distinctions within my body, my mind shatters into pieces. I try too hard. I work off balance. I do the equivalent of squeezing the block too hard. Right? And then when you squeeze the block too hard, you probably tensed your mouth, right? A whole bunch of things started happening when you're squeezing the block too hard. That's the mind shattering into pieces because it's being asked to do something with too much will. Okay? So when my body's one, my mind's in pieces. When my body's in pieces, my mind can be one. Right? So everyone stand up again, put the block between your ankles. So now find the sweet spot. And so I hope you have your shoes up. Find the sweet spot of action. But now, in addition to just squeezing the block in one direction, lengthen down the inner edge and the inner inside edge of your feet. Like feel the skin along the block. And notice when your mind has to have intelligence in its effort. When you squeeze the block and extend down the inner edge of the block of your foot, maybe you can tell that your chest lifted better. It did. And then release. And so even if this is the last thing I want to say, and I got to take a couple questions, even if I can't do things, and then have a seat back down, right? Even if I can't do things, you have to instruct my whole body. You have to instruct my whole body. You have to tell me and have the courage to tell me to push down through my feet. Because that's how yoga pose happens. And you're going to find is that those are, I can't do that. So we'll do it anyway. Right? Because I know when you start to exert prana, here's another big line. Prana, this is not the only line. There are a lot of ways to learn yoga. Prana follows consciousness more than it follows breath. Right? So you can exert through your body. And then when you can add breath to it, remember, this is only one of the paths of yoga realization. You don't. That line is just like one part of one path. But but it's an important path for me to believe that I can push down through my feet. And because I taught a whole bunch of spinal cord injured people to push down through their feet, now they can transfer when they couldn't on their own because they're using their whole body. Guess what? You're stronger when you use your whole body. Don't think that the only way to realize and work through your whole body is with a functioning spinal cord in it. Full unfettered ability. It's not. The human organism is freaking miraculous. It's going to figure out ways to live in the whole body, right? And that's what you got to show me. You got to show me how to receive the parts of the pose that aren't as physical. And that'll open up my mind to receive yogic realization. But that means you need to start practicing that way. Okay. And so I've given you a couple of quick, down to go up, in to go out, lift the chest in every pose. Space is the conduit of the inner body. The subtle body reveals itself as a sensation of relief. I mean, there's a whole bunch of lines I've said here that are actually integral at a foundational level of how asana works. So if you didn't get it, write them down, go back and watch this again, and they're ones to explore the rest of your life. Right? These truths are like holy crimes. And I can't teach them to you exactly. I can share them with you, right? You need to explore it. I can confirm and affirm stuff, but you just have to experience it. That there was always something miraculous going on in yoga poses. That's what I want access to. I just don't want you to teach me how to adapt trikonasana, right? I can show you a whole bunch of cool ways to teach trikonasana. I can show you how to teach standing pose on the floor, sitting up, right? Or standing up and using reference, using a wall. How do you teach Tadasana laying down? You should think about stuff like that. What are the sensations of Tadasana that you need to repeat while someone's lying on the floor? How would you teach dodge pose to someone in a chair? Right? Think about the sensations of dog pose. Figure out what the arms are doing, the elongation of the spine, right? So like if they're in a chair, I might turn the chair towards the wall and have them put their arms up, right? I'd make the wall of the floor, make it not dependent on them standing on their feet. I would show what the arms and the spine needs to do. And then I'd cue their legs, right? Adapt sensations. Don't get caught on how they look, the poses. Tell me, show me how they feel, and then figure out, right? All right, so couple of questions in the thing. How do we get into poses affects how comfortable it is? Is that correct? Yeah, I would say, here's one of those crazy lines that I think you have to think about the rest of your life, because I do. All poses begin and end with a sensation of relief. If you actually think your poses begin when your physical exertion begins, guess again, right? Guess again, not right. That's where your control comes into the pose, right? The poses, the prana is already happening, right? So you need to start realizing that things are coming into being through your body, right? And they're getting expression. And so, yeah, if you're starting out already clenching your jaw on the inside of your mouth because you're anticipating the pose because your mind's not in the present, you're thinking about how hard it's going to be. Yeah, no, that's not a great way to start a pose. Once Humpty Dumpty breaks, it's hard to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. Is it advisable to get a yoga teacher if we can learn yoga? Is it advisable to get a yoga teacher if we want to learn yoga? Yeah, you'll save some time. I've made a lot of mistakes, right? And so I can teach you because of my mistakes as much as because of my knowledge, right? I think a yoga teacher actually helps. But the greatest, most important thing is your own practice. And that's the big differentiator, right? I mean, it's only like 5% of all yoga students practice on their own. I've never lived in the same city as my yoga teacher. So my practice has always been on my own and then seeing my teacher when it happens. And it's fantastic when it happens. What is the precaution that we need to take before doing yoga? For example, can we drink, eat, shower? I would not eat like a couple of cheeseburgers right before a yoga practice, right? I really wouldn't. But if you need to have some food in your stomach, do, but less is more, right? I like to do something that reminds me that I'm like, I wash my face, I brush my teeth. I do something to honor the fact that I need to cleanse and be alert for my yoga practice. So yeah, but you know, and the great thing about it, if you eat two cheeseburgers and you do a lot of twists and you get nauseous the whole day, you'll learn not to eat a couple of cheeseburgers, right? I mean, and again, your practice is gonna be the teacher, right? And so, but you don't wanna be fainting if you're really hungry, right? So again, it comes back to common sense. All right, I'm supposed to be done on time. I can't go longhand, is that the thing?
I have to close the session and we have to be done at the hour. So I hate to cut
you off. I object. I refuse. I won't quit.
You are dropping so many nuggets of wisdom here, and everyone's minds are being blown. I'm loving seeing what's happening in the chat. So please have a scroll through that. Thank you so much, Matthew. This has been so amazing. I know everyone is getting a lot out of this. We're putting some links in the chat now, how you can connect with Matthew, how you can learn from him. I highly recommend learning from him. He is a wealth of knowledge. We do have to take an hour break. Please take care of yourself during this break, whether that's time away from the screen or connecting with one another in the coffee break rooms. We're putting the link for that or the Facebook group. This session is recorded. It will be available to watch for 48 hours. Do so, because you're going to pick up all those little nuggets that he's dropping. And then when we come back from our session, we'll have Cindy Lee offering sustainable yoga for life. And I want to take it back to you for one last thing, Matthew. I would love for you to share with us your top tip for embodiment in a sentence.
But remember mindbodysolutions.org, and I also do an adaptive online training in January, right? So no matter where you are in the world, the tip for what again?
For being embodied.
Learn to receive. Learn to receive.
That's beautiful. Oh, I'm so glad you're offering that training online now.
Yep. So next one, we just did one 2 weeks ago, and it's just new because of COVID, and it worked pretty well. I was surprised. So take care, everybody. Thanks for you guys that came on the screen so I got to talk to somebody. That always makes it a little easier than looking at yourself when you're teaching. So thanks to all of you that were on the screen. All right?
Thank you.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.